This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Frida Liu. It's Resource Centre. SMEs in Malaysia have evolved and grown over the last 10 years to be more savvy about responding to global trends and competing effectively in a borderless market. Among the many critical emerging issues are how intangible assets such as intellectual property, that is trademarks, patents, designs and copyrights, are playing a more important role compared with physical assets as a lever of growth. And more importantly, how can SMEs monetize their IP? In the study today, in the studio today, and Mohan Kodeval, Mohan K, Principal and Director of Ad Astra Intellectual Property, and Joseph Root, Senior U.S. Patent Attorney. Welcome, gentlemen. So we've had a couple of sessions where people come and talk about IP, but what are the different ways in which IP can be monetized?
There are many ways to monetize it. I mean, one of the ways is enforcement. When someone copies you, you enforce your rights, then you ask them for compensation. That's one. Then you can also monetize it by way of licensing. You have a technology, you have a particular name, you can also license your name and get money from licensing, some royalties from it. You can have an outright sale, assignment, you can also monetize. And now one of the latest things that's happening now is using it as a collateral to get financing. So you value your IPs, be it patents or trademark, and then you can go to a financial institution and tell them, okay, we need some funds based on our IPs.
Right.
So you can collateral.
I know we've got MIPO right now. Are banks in Malaysia appreciating IP as collateral?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, banks are a bit slow to do it, but there's this another financial institution called MDV, Malaysia Debt Ventures. So they have got some funds to recognize IP as collateral. So they are a bit more forthcoming compared to the banks. But eventually, I guess the banks would come forward as well.
Right. So fill us in on the grants and funding available to companies. I know apart from creating, innovating, I understand there are also funds available for IP filing and protection-related expenditure.
Yeah, I mean, in time, I mean, they do have these funds. I mean, not necessarily it's continuous, but once in a while they do have. Matrade had filing for trademarks about a few years back. Now there's a new fund under SME Corp. It's a very new fund that has been just introduced for filing IPs. So if you come for the talk tomorrow, they can know more because SME Corp will be there to talk about this particular fund.
Okay, so there's
a seminar tomorrow at MIPO, my IPO itself.
For 2 days, right? Yeah. Well, Joe, and you bring with us the latest trends on IP from around the world. You've been doing this for a while. What do you see are the developments impacting the global and local business community as far as IP is concerned?
Basically, the IP has grown in importance as people have understood how powerful IP rights can be. You know, we've just been talking about ways to develop income streams from IP. A lot of people these days forget the traditional way of monetizing IP, which is simply to remain exclusivity in your product. If you've got a patent on, for example, a given process. One of the ways that you can monetize that is to simply, as opposed to licensing, simply say, I'm going to be the only person making that product. Mm. And by doing that, you protect your own market share and you protect your own pricing level because you don't have to worry about competition because your technology, backed up by your IP rights, has guaranteed you a place in the market.
So do you find that, will the talk tomorrow be covering a lot on mobile apps as well? Because that seems to be something that's sort of making money for people and they want to protect that.
Yeah, there's a lot of doubts whether mobile application, that's the latest trend. Most of the technologies that are coming out now, especially from startups, mobile applications and also software-related inventions. So that's actually going to be touched on by Joe. He's going to tell us, I mean, what's the latest trends in US as well and what are the courts doing over there. But as long as there's an intelligence in that particular application, that's something that can be protected in Malaysia.
Okay. So in this case, like Joseph, for example, with Uber, right? And that's from the US. And, of course, in Malaysia, we've got Grab, right? So it looks similar in terms of what they offer, but there's something else behind the scenes.
Well, you have to get into the details of exactly what is going to be protected on both sides. So, for example, if Uber has a patent on, you know, they're not going to get a patent on the notion of providing cab services. What they can get a patent on is the actual functioning of the way their app works. For example, one of the things their app does is tell you tell you how long it's going to be before a given car gets to your location. There's a lot required to technologically to be able to tell you that. So the question is exactly what is their competition doing that allows them to give the same sort of information?
Okay, so and the next step would be then to increase the income streams, right, from the same IP. What are the ways that this can be done?
Okay, firstly, I mean, I would also like to touch up earlier. You know, you mentioned about. You know, you see two similar sort of technologies, and how come when you have a patent? Social media, for example, now Facebook is very well known. But previously, you've heard of Friendster.
Yeah.
What you don't see behind the scene is, I mean, Facebook has actually paid a certain amount of royalty to Friendster for the technology that they had, for the patent that they actually had. So these are the ways that, you know, one can actually benefit or monetize.
Okay. Yeah. So what are some other innovative ways of monetizing IP that people are not aware of?
As I mentioned earlier, I mean, one is using it as a collateral in order to go and get some financial assistance, licensing. When you talk about IP, it's not only about patents, there's also trademarks. Right. So when you have a trademark, you can license your trademark. You can also franchise your mark. Okay. That's also another way of monetizing.
Okay.
You know, one thing to look at that a lot of businesses need to think about is developing income streams from the technology that you're not using. Typically, if you've got several engineers that are trying to develop your product, some of the material that they come up with is very technologically interesting, but you're not going to use that directly in your product. That still can be valued if you protect that technology as well as the technology that's going into your product. You can go out and license the technology that you're not using, and instead of having that simply sit on the shelf, develop an income stream for it. A lot of companies in the U.S., particularly large companies, are doing that. IBM makes about $1 billion a year off of simple licensing,
right?
And you know, because a lot of their research winds up going into products that they aren't selling themselves, and so they thought of the fact that they need to go out and license this technology and get some use out of it.
You know, just earlier on, you were asking me, Mohan, said, so is BFM trademarked? And you were saying that, you know, someone can just start a station and call it Wall FM. What's the danger if we haven't?
Firstly, what you need to do is you need to make a check and see whether you have. But if you haven't, then there's a danger because another person would be riding on your goodwill. Mm-hmm. If they come up with something similar, it's going to be tougher for you to stop them. If you have a trademark, you can just go there and say, I've got this trademark, you have to stop immediately. If you don't have it, and worst case, in case they file it first, if they file first, they're going to get it registered. Then it's going to be even tougher for you to get your rights.
Even though we've proven, like, we've been around for 8 years,
I mean, you would be able to. I mean, because you have prior use. Yeah, right. Of course, you would be able to then say that I have prior use. But stopping them, because they've already got the registration, so you have a competitor out there.
This is the possible dangers. Let me talk about some of the common mistakes and other misconceptions around IP in just a moment. I'm here with Mohan K, together with Joseph Root. You're listening to Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Best for marketing, BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. This is Frieda Lewis, Resource Centre. If you've just joined us, we're talking about monetizing intellectual property. I've got Mohan K from Ad Astra Intellectual Property and Joseph Root, who's a senior U.S. patent attorney. They're here for a conference with MIPO. You know, Mohan, you've been doing this for close to 20 years right now. So do you see how SMEs are waking up to this and paying attention to IP?
Oh, yeah, the awareness has definitely grown. I mean, 20 years back when I used to talk about patents, people used to say, what patent? Are you drawing something? but now when I mention patents, they straight away say Samsung and Apple cases. They will cite those cases to me. And when I say trademark, they would know about the Macquarie case, you know, for example. So the awareness has definitely grown. They are starting at least trademarks. They're filing the trademarks. They've not come to the stage of filing every single technology that they have, but it's moving in the right direction. And the Patent Office is also doing a good job educating the people on the importance of filing IPs.
Okay. So, and, you know, what common mistakes do you see in the world of IP? You know, any interesting case studies to share? Joe, you would have seen a lot.
Sure. I think the biggest mistake people make is that is slipping in the process of getting protection. For example, everybody remembers Rubik's Cube, one of the most innovative products that has been seen in the last 50 or 60 years. Well, as it happened, Rubik is from Budapest, and his patent lawyers slipped, let's say, in getting international protection. And so at the end of the day, Rubik only had patent protection in Hungary. That's not a large part of the market that he appealed to. So about 50% of all the Rubik's Cubes ever sold were sold by knockoff people.
Made in China.
a lot of elsewhere in the world.
Right. So, and that's the thing, right? You know, like companies are required to file for IP in every country they might want to operate in, right? Yeah. What's a smarter way of doing this? Because I'm sure that's the first thing they'll say. What is going to cost me a lot of money to patent in every country?
Yeah, I mean, that's a concern that most of them have, and they always feel that when it comes to IPs, it's something very expensive. Not necessarily. There are also strategies. Firstly, filing in Malaysia may not be an expensive process. And when they want to extend it to other countries and they want to file it in most countries overseas, there are strategies of going about it. Where patents are concerned, there's something called PCT, Patent Corporation Treaty, where once you file in Malaysia and you have your budget for filing in Malaysia, then you file a PCT within a year, and you will then get another extension of 1.5 years. So in total, 2.5 years from the time you file in Malaysia to get into every single country in the world. Now, 2.5 years is good enough a time for you to evaluate and see whether your technology is moving. If your invention doesn't move, there's no traction in your invention, then why bother filing in every single country? So typically what my clients will normally ask me is, okay, now if I file in Malaysia, I just file a PCT, I don't file in anywhere in the world, and someone goes and files in Singapore in 6 months' time, am I still protected? Yes, you are protected, as long as you file in Singapore within 2.5 years of your Malaysian application.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, we've got all these things in place. What's enforcement like, though, in all these different countries? I mean, in terms of support legally and everything, does it move as quickly?
It's good. I mean, I can speak from a Malaysian point of view. We even have an IP court, you know, to handle the cases, and it's moving very fast. So whenever it goes, when there's any infringement taking place, our enforcement officers also move pretty fast. I mean, within 2 weeks, I think you can get our enforcement officers out there to raid a particular place where there's any infringement taking place. So the enforcement is good, and where other countries, maybe, Joe, you might want to...
Yeah, people are realizing more and more that that a strong indicator of a good place to do business is the effective rule of law in terms of IP. I know that you know, several countries a decade ago had very poor protection schemes, and folks were very worried, for example, about filing patent applications in India simply because there was a reputation that things could that you couldn't really protect yourself in India. India wants to is rapidly joining the world market, and that situation has radically changed. So that now you can get good IP protection in places like India, China, and so on.
Right. Are there a lot of differences in policies, though, around the world in the way IP rights are governed and protected?
There's differences, but they're not radical differences. Basically, if you've got a patent that is going to be generally patentable in let's say Europe, it's also going to be patentable in the U.S. There are some differences, certainly. The U.S. has generally been more favorable to patents on computer software. Europe has generally been tighter. Germany has a reputation of having very very tight patent standards. But you know, these are differences of degree rather than differences of kind.
Right. Okay. And what's the impact on IP upon the signing of the TPPA?
Many are a bit concerned when you sign the TPPA and IP protection can be extended. I mean, they are always mentioning about there's a clause in there that says the protection now can be extended by a certain number of years. But there's also, you can't just freely get it. Mm. You need to actually prove that in case the patent office or any government agencies delays in giving out the patent, only then would you be able to extend the protection. So in a way, it can actually be good because the patent office has to be a bit more efficient from now onwards. They have to be efficient and make sure that when an application is filed, they have to not delay it unnecessarily and grant a patent as quickly as possible. So once that is done, the companies cannot extend the patent protection rights unnecessarily.
Right. Yeah. The whole story with IP as well, what's the downside of not doing this with global brands? And I'm assuming global brands would have the budget, would have the lawyers in place already. Have there been cases where there are large companies who overlooked?
Sure. Yeah. Particularly in the field of luxury goods. Mm. For example, the Gucci trademark was registered by local folks long before Gucci thought to go into business in some of the smaller countries.
Right.
Once upon a time, I worked for R.J. Reynolds, back before cigarettes were quite as disreputable as they are today. And several of Reynolds' global brands, such as Camel and Winston, were registered, for example, in some African countries before there was a marketing program there.
Right.
And it cost Reynolds a fair amount of money to go in and secure the rights because a lot of places in the world on trademarks, it's a regime of the first person to file gets the rights.
Mm.
And if somebody goes in and files on Gucci or any of the cigarette brands, for example, they wind up with those rights, and you've got to and you can't simply say that I've got I'm a big time U.S. guy. They're going to say, well, then pay me big time money to buy your brand back, and that's happened in lots of places.
Right. So you'll be here together, Mohan. Both of you will be speaking at this conference. Tell us about this conference.
Okay, this conference is organized between MyIPO, the Patent Office, and also SME Corp. And there are several speakers over there. We are going to be talking about IPs, and Joe is going to touch on some of the latest developments in U.S. With regards to patent applications. We also have some speakers who are going to talk on some of the fundings that's available by the different government agencies from MDTC, SME Corp, on IP filings. There's also a speaker on who's going to touch on TPPA and how does TPPA have any effect on IP as well.
Okay, so all these things that we've covered minorly, you can get hold of that. Yeah. I guess people can go to the MIPO website to register for the event. Yeah. Well, thanks for enlightening me on a lot of things around IP. I'm speaking to Mohan K from Ad Astra Intellectual Property and Joseph Root, a senior U.S. patent attorney. You've been listening to Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Yes or no question. Is it possible to create a situation of zero waste on our planet? In the Netherlands, they're working hard at it, purifying and harvesting raw materials from sewage water to be reused in the economy.
So we have the reuse of energy, we produce new materials, bioplastics out of the wastewater, we reuse the phosphate, and we try to reuse the nitrogen. In the Netherlands, all that water authorities are busy with the reuse of all the materials out of the wastewater.
Well, we're doing a lot of research for the Dutch water boards, and one of the resources we are focusing on is the recovery of cellulose, if we can reuse the used toilet paper out of wastewater.
Find out how it's all done on Resource Center's World Water Day special. Search for World Water Day special on www.bfm.my to listen to the podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.